Economic diversification and international trade. Farmers routinely adjust to rainfall risk by diversifying their crops. Drought-resistant varieties are intercropped with more vulnerable varieties in order to insure against disaster. Non-agricultural activities, for example, commerce and small-scale industry, that are not directly dependent on the rains can be added to the mix of activities in rural communities. Long-distance trade, both regional and global, also allow communities to specialize in farm activities that are drought-resistant. For instance, tree crops with deep root structures that resist short-term dry spells, and to use the cash income to import foodstuffs. As climate change causes further stress in dryland regions, increased trade will surely have to play a critical role. Some parched regions will simply be incapable of continuing to produce food. Other regions will become their suppliers through international trade. A few regions, especially the high latitudes of the United States, Canada, and Russia, may experience a rise in farm productivity due to global warming, which might bring longer growing seasons and more rainfall. Some of these far northern regions might become important new breadbaskets for the world. We should not, however, believe that international trade will by itself simply save the day. If a region of subsistence farmers is no longer able to produce food, there is no guarantee that it will be able to shift to an alternative source of income in order to buy food. Many times the very poor are simply reshuffled out of one activity and are then left without the means to start up productive work in another. They can go hungry as a result, and many deaths can ensue. While it is true that trade can play a critical role in reallocating agriculture around the world, international markets cannot by themselves be relied upon to ensure that all people will survive the shocks. Toward global water cooperation. There is no coordinated water management authority or technical agency for water in the United Nations system. At least a dozen international or treaty organizations play some role: UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, the World Bank, the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, the UN Industrial Development Organization, UNIDO, the United Nations Development Program, UNDP, the United Nations Environment Program, UNEP, the UN Convention to Combat Desertification, UNCCD, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, the UN Convention on Biological Diversity, CBD, the International Water Management Institute, IWMI, the International Crop Research Institute for the Semi-Arid Tropics, ICRISAT, and countless additional regional bodies are also involved. The problem is that this great mass of activities produces far less than the sum of the parts. There is no overall responsibility, accountability, or vision as to how to address the intermixture of climate change, agricultural stress, and water technologies, how to implement plans with global funding, or how to combine water programs with other development initiatives such as poverty reduction. Moreover, sound water solutions require local specificity and considerable cooperation among neighboring countries that share watersheds. This is a tall order. There are 273 international water basins in the world, which involve 145 countries covering more than 90% of the global population. The necessity for an apical international body on water is urgent, given the scale of the challenge and the interconnected problems of technology, economics, and diplomacy. A first step, at least, would be to focus on the hardest-hit lands, specifically the world's dry lands. Fortunately, these are covered by the UN Convention to Combat Desertification, which has 191 member governments as signatories. Unfortunately, the treaty as it now stands is little known and has little clout and financial backing. Rather than reinvent the treaty, however, it would be better to reinvigorate it. A starting point would be for the Science and Technology Committee of the UNCCD to carry out a major international scientific assessment of the world's water situation, focusing on the dry lands, with a special charge to investigate each of the following: priorities for improved water technologies, priorities for water efficiency in agriculture, hydrological risks from climate change, access of the poorest of the poor to water security for household use and agricultural use, financial requirements to achieve the Millennium Development Goal, MDG, for drinking water and sanitation. None of this will convey much interest or enthusiasm, however, if the result just sits as another empty document. What the Drylands will need is help to finance the implementation of real solutions, including funding for research and development on drought-resistant farming systems, seeds, water management, tillage practices, crop choices, land management, financing for efficient irrigation and safe drinking water, increased water storage capacities, and the like. In 2003, the Global Environmental Facility, GEF, an international fund to support environmental programs, was charged with being the financial backer of the UNCCD. The GEF is a reputable choice, as it is the world's major environmental finance facility, operated jointly by the UN Development Programme, UNDP, the World Bank, and the United Nations Environment Programme, UNEP. The problem, however, is that the scale of financing is no more than one-tenth, if not one-hundredth, of the magnitude needed to be taken seriously. The GEF allocation for dry land management was established at $250 million for the recent four-year period, 2002 to 2006, or roughly $60 million per year. Instead, to confront the dry land crises in places such as Darfur, Somalia, and Ethiopia, we will require funding of several billion dollars per year.